We've been covering the Super Bowl all week on The Ringer NFL Show, Ryan Russillo's podcast, Slow News Day, The Ringer Gambling Show, The Ringer Fantasy Football Show, and even The Ringer's Philly Special with Shio Kapadia and Ben Solak breaking down the Eagles, which we launched this year. Maybe it was good luck for the Eagles. I don't know. You can also read TheRinger.com. Super Bowl coverage all week on The Ringer. It's the Bill Simmons podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Taco Bell. If you're anything like me during a busy day at work, I need lunch that is just as fresh as it is delicious and easy. And the all-new Cantina Chicken menu from Taco Bell is exactly that. Made with high-quality ingredients like seasoned slow-roasted chicken, pico de gallo, shredded purple cabbage, and avocado verde salsa sauce. The new Cantina Chicken Tacos, Burrito, and Quesadilla are the perfect daytime choice. Try the new Cantina Chicken menu at Taco Bell now. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network, where you can find an incredible slew of sports and pop culture podcasts. This podcast, this is the special trade deadline podcast. And guess what? This is only part one. The Kevin Durant trade, one of the bigger NBA trades in the history of the league. Yeah, we're going to devote part one to that. We might be doing two parts today, three parts, four parts. I have no idea. We'll see what happens. Ryan Russillo is next. It is time. Let's bring in our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, we're taping this. It is 8:17 a.m. Pacific time. We almost did this late last night, but nephew Kyle was nowhere to be found. Who knows where he was? He might have been in a bar. He might have been asleep. I don't know, but we're doing
I'm
it today.
So glad. I'm sorry. I'm too excited because I wanted to talk about this first before we get to any of the trades. I promise I'll be quick, but I'm in Arizona, and then the Durant thing happens, and Bill sends a text to Kyle and I, and it's like, oh, no. And I was like, yeah. And then it's like, what do we do? And then it went on for 10 minutes. Like, I've already eaten in my hotel room. I know we have a long day. I'm ready to shut it down. Kyle hasn't responded. And finally, I just go to Bill. I'm like, what are you asking? And then Bill kind of knew. And he's like, okay, 8 a.m. tomorrow early, ready to go, boys. And we're like, yeah, sounds good. Because you wanted to go last night. And that was
no, I didn't. I didn't want to go last night. But I also could have been convinced. It was one of the, I had just come back from the Clippers game. I was tired. I just had M&Ms. So I was like coming on a sugar high crash down. And then I'm driving back and the KD trade happens. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. It's like 10:30. What do we do? We could start here. This is one of the biggest NBA trades ever. Like I was watching First Take today and they were like, Phoenix, or they're the favorite. I'm like, guys, like out of all the, I have 16 Pantheon guys, right? Only six of them have ever been traded, like at some point where they were in their prime or near the tail end, or, you know, Kareem in 75, Wilt in 64 and 68, Oscar in 70, Shaq in 04, and Moses in 82. Five of those six trades led to a title. So let's start there. The Suns are the favorites. I think it's them in Boston, right? They're at least the favorites in the West. I think they can win the title from this trade this year. What was your instant reaction?
Yeah, I think, you know, we could talk pricing and market and all that kind of stuff, because I think that's probably one of my favorite things about what's gone on the last couple of years, is just kind of figuring out, like, how do you price anything anymore? You know, it's really hard on the comps. But if you're running Phoenix with new ownership, new owner syndrome, this is a great, like, to talk about going from a leaked report where Isaiah Thomas is going to be running your organization to know that's not true. We got Kevin Durant a day later, like all time emotional roller coaster, which also tells you, like, from the Kelvin Sampson playbook, I feel like Isaiah Thomas leaked that and they were like, dude, we're going to handle this. Because I'd heard one time when Ballmer bought the Clippers, like Isaiah Thomas was just around forever being like, let me run the team. feeling like you just turn on that charm. So I think the conversation, Bill, is real simple, because I know we're going to spend a lot of time on this. It's like, do you want to make this deal and be the favorites in the West? You know, and there's just something about saying...
Well, did you read the reporting?
Well,
where
which part?
It was basically like Woj had last night. It was, you know, they were leaning toward John Collins was going to be the trade today. And it seemed like around 8 o'clock last night, Ishbia told James Jones, like, hey, man, let's go get Durant. Like, what are we doing? Let's actually do this. And that's when, in within 2 hours, it was done. But they had to put bridges on the table. So your new owner syndrome thing, I think Ishbia last night was like, John Collins, that's going to be my first move. Let's go fucking get one of the 15 best players ever. Let's go.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's a hard thing to resist, especially with even being a new owner. I mean, usually the new owner is totally screwed up on the first transaction, and we'll see. I mean, we never know. Like, there's going to be this run.
It's
in future.
For France.
These right. The worst deal Danny Ainge probably ever did in a trade was the first one where they took on Rafe's contract and then had to use a lottery pick to flip it for Theo Ratliff's contract just to save a year on money. And you start going down that road. It's like, all right, what are we doing? I mean, that's speaking of Isaiah Thomas, that's what he kept doing. He kept trading the expiring contract that wasn't great for a slightly better player with a longer contract. It's what the Cavs did around LeBron the first time he was there. But I mean, if you're the Suns and you go, okay, we got Booker, Paul, Ayton, Durant, you know, Cam Johnson's a bit of a loss. Bridges is a nice player. But when you go, hey, we've got those 3 to 4 dudes, like what are
that, which was the goal. You're just flipping your wings into Durant and you're keeping everything else.
Yeah.
And
so
then
hey,
you can patch in together. You can get buyout guys. You know, you can get lucky with Damian Lee, campaign and people like that. But you know, you have the four and you can build around that for 3 years.
Yeah, that's a really hard thing. I don't care if you've been owning a team for 20 years. Like, do you want to be the favorites in the West tomorrow? Doesn't mean it doesn't guarantee anything. But like, when you think about the other trades, right? You know, we'll go over a bunch of these things. Like, when we talk about the Lakers at some point, you're like, okay,
I think we should save the other trades for tomorrow, because I think this first part should just be about this trade and all of the tentacles of it. I think we could save everything for later. This is by far the biggest thing, because it also destroyed the Nets, which we can go into later.
Yeah, but it's not about me getting into a deep dive in the other trades. It's just simply like when you're sitting in the room and you're talking about, hey, we can do this deal. Okay, what does it guarantee us? And a lot of these deals guarantee nothing. Like, hey, we're going to win an extra round, or we know we're in the top four of the West now, or whatever. This, okay, in the best version of events, puts you atop everybody else in the West, in a West where, you know, this now feels a little dismissive of Denver because they've been really steady and really good and they're healthy. And it's like when you watch them, you go, man, they've really figured some things out defensively. I still don't believe that Memphis is this total mess. I still would have a lot of Memphis stock. You know, there's other teams now where it's hard. But
Golden State too.
Yeah, you get to sit there if you're Phoenix and wake up today going, we've got a real chance to do this. And it feels a little bit like the Anthony Davis Lakers trade.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a Simmons Russillo. We approve the trades when you give up this many assets if you can actually guarantee that you might make the finals.
Yeah.
It can't be like we're good now, we're in the mix. It's got to be like you're giving up. You think like just the Bridges piece of this alone, OG Anunoby. I think he's better than OG Anunoby.
Well, because he is.
And also, he's been in bigger games and he's just, we've seen him when Booker went out, he increased his points, all that stuff. And OG Anunoby's out there for like 3 first rounders and Zaire Williams. So you think like they got 4 first rounders, they got a pick swap, they got Bridges. They also got Cam Johnson, who probably if he was traded separately is worth at least a first. And maybe, you know, could they have gotten like the Lakers 2027 first for him? Like maybe. So I just think the haul that they gave up, which I think we both think was probably worth it if you're trying to win the title, but man. I don't know how to make sense of the cost of this stuff either. It's like the gas prices analogy where it's like gas is $8. Okay. I filled my tank yesterday. It was $180. I have no idea why. I have no idea why this became the price. Think about the Barkley, your guy Barkley. Tim Perry, Andrew Lang, and Jeff Hornacek. That was the price 30 years ago. There were no picks at all. And now it's like you're just basically gutting the rest of the decade, your two best young players, and you're hoping you can win a title in the next 3 years. We don't know what's going to happen. Durant and Booker on the books for, I think, $102 million in 2026, $108 million in 2027. Like, long-term, this might be a disaster, but they don't care.
No, it might be, but I'd rather maybe have a disaster on my hands for this, for Durant, than some of the other stuff that we've seen. And, you know, I know Minnesota fans, like, they don't want to hear about it anymore, but, like, that's what makes this Gobert deal. Like, people kept going like, well, if Gobert was this, then what is Durant worth? And you're like, I don't know. I would just hang up the phone going, if you think that I'm going to do some correlation of what Gobert got you, and then that means the math is now 8 picks or some ridiculous, like there's a cap on what I can do for you. It reminded me of like the Barry Zito contract when they were like, what did you give him? And it's like, okay, well, that means that every left-hander now is supposed to get $100 million guaranteed. And you're like, nope, that was just a ridiculous contract. Like, that's
the outlier. Or the Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, Evan Turner summer. It was like, wait, is this what non-All-Stars are worth now? Like
the Evan Turner one. I mean, it's like, you know, and that was my favorite year because every time a deal was done, they were like, dude, the cap went up though. I'm like, so what does that mean? There's no bad deals anymore? Like, it just so... Yeah. I'm with you. I thought about it. We understand the risk. And somebody, there is going to be a franchise that's going to have a documentary done on them in like 2033 when they lost 3 Hall of Famers because of these pick swaps and all this stuff. There is going to be some team that gets so emotionally gutted for like a decade because they just were like, hey, everybody's just handing out unprotected first the whole time. I also think it's going to be weird when you're going to have like 4 teams have 15 picks in the first round, and then they're all going to be looking to trade to somebody. And then everyone that wants to trade with them is like, I can just go to the other 3 teams that have multiple firsts and undercut you. So there's a pricing thing on future first that you wonder where that's going.
Didn't we kind of have that though with the Nets? Like you think the Celtics got Tatum and Brown out of that KG Pierce trade, you know? So we've already seen a version of this, and I think people have forgotten the Nets part of it. That is because of that trade, they got those 2 guys that is now 15 years of the Celtics, basically, and they're a contender every year. So we know what the price is. The price is you might have a Tatum Brown situation down the road, but I think I was thinking about it. KD is the best Phoenix Sun ever. The nominees are Barkley in 93, Nash, Kidd, CP3, but he was a first-team All-NBA guy when he got hurt. I think he was even ahead of Giannis, right? When they were 17-2 in their last 19. He was averaging 30 a game. It looked like that was going to be the guy that he is for the next 4 or 5 years. He's the best scoring forward of all time. Guys like this just don't get traded. You know, we don't see it. The last trade was Shaq in 2004. That was 19 years ago. That's the last time we've had a Pantheon guy just move teams. We've seen free agency, but you're not allowed to trade for these guys usually. And I think that was my biggest takeaway. Like, you know, we knew you could feel this in the air Sunday after the Kyrie trade. And there was some Suns buzz and that had been out there before. And we'd heard KD, even on my podcast, like 6 years ago, he's like, I like that Devin Booker. You know, he put that out there. And anytime KD is like, I like that player, it's like, all right, we got to take that seriously because he said that about Kyrie. But this was the only team. I don't, like, Sacramento couldn't have done this trade. Would he have been happy there?
Yeah,
Sacramento could have put the same trade together, but I don't think he would have been happy there.
Yeah, that's the other part of the pricing. Like, if you're Phoenix, are you going, hey, if we trade for him, like, we know he's going to be happy here. So does Brooklyn say, well, that means you have to pay more, whereas New Orleans gets to pay less? Or are you then saying, if you're Phoenix, well, wait, I'm supposed to pay more because it's drama-free? You know, well, then who am I competing against? Sacramento, where he's going to ask out in a year. New Orleans, where he might ask out in a year. Brandon Ingram, like, might be a better player than Bridges, but he missed almost 30 games with the toe injury. So I just love
Sacramento
this part of
it. Sacramento would have been Barnes, Murray, Rashawn Holmes' contract, 4 firsts and a swap would have been their version of this trade. But then they would have done that with KD 12 hours later going, nah, I don't really want to go to Sacramento. Now what do you do? But with Phoenix, they had laid out 4 days of kind of groundwork, it sounded like. There was a lot of conversation between. And that's the other thing with the tampering stuff now. Phoenix has to have some sort of sign at some point that, hey, yeah, Durant's good if you do this, right? They're not doing it otherwise.
Well, first of all, that's how agents work. I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah.
And like, that's why anyone who has an agent, usually you kind of know like what the hell's going to happen. So,
right.
You know, if you've got a guy that can, I mean, even the legal part of it, where I remember one time when an agent explained it to me, I was like, wait, can I even do that? And he's like, technically, I, on your behalf, like this was back in the CAA days.
Yeah.
The guy was like, on your behalf, I can engage in this. And I was like, yeah, but that's not allowed. It's like, well, so
I'm the middleman for the aberrant behavior.
That's sort of some dickhead on radio. Can you imagine if you're a Hall of Fame NBA player, like what kind of information you have access to here? So I look, this is the way business is done. It doesn't remotely bother me. And I find it weird when people are offended by it. So
you have, I still feel like Denver and the Suns, I have them on the same plane, but then I think it drops to the next tier unless right now it's 8:30, unless we see some trades. I think this puts pressure on Golden State. I think this puts pressure on Memphis because the West is wide open. You know, Celtics like Jaylen Brown broke some bone in his face yesterday. He might be out for a while. Milwaukee, Middleton hasn't looked great the whole time. The league feels really open for a bunch of different teams. And Phoenix, you know, we don't know what Chris Paul is going to be. We'll get to him later, but they got to get 10 weeks out of him. Booker's got to come back. They got to figure out how to work all these dudes in. They got to figure out who is their 5 through 9 guys that they can actually rely on in a playoff series. So I saw Phoenix was like +460 today to win the title. I was like, nah, I wouldn't bet that, but it's probably right. Like they're the third highest favorites right now. Then just we'll go big picture and then we'll hit some of the smaller questions. But I mean, the KD Kyrie Nets, this is now the go-to team that we'll mention when we're like the most, you know, like basically like when we were growing up and they would always talk about like Ishtar. Or the, yeah. You know, these movies
Ishtar.
That like,
Ishtar
oh,
took
man,
a ton
Ishtar.
Of heat.
Yeah. Or like Waterworld. And there was just these go-to references for, oh, Titanic. Oh my God. You hear this stuff about Titanic? It might be another Waterworld. I feel like the KD Kyrie Nets is like that. That's like the movie version of that, where anytime somebody's making big moves and trying to put together stuff, I'm like, oh, man, I hope that doesn't turn out like the Durant Kyrie Nets. Don't you feel like this is like an iconic disaster?
It is, but you know, you would do it again. You would.
Yeah,
and that's,
I agree.
I think that's the lesson in all of this stuff and all these big risks.
I wouldn't do that. I don't know about the Harden piece, but yeah.
No, the Harden thing I would have a hard time with, but here's the thing I'll just always resist. It's like, man, the Nets did this and, you know, all the stuff they did wrong. They had a guy who didn't want to play basketball, okay, who's in Dallas now, talking about how disrespectful everybody was to him and that he's so happy Durant's able to move on.
So
and
happy
like,
he got out of
right.
there.
It's yeah,
like,
right.
There, the place that gave you literally everything? What are you talking about? Is
and
he
whatever,
in the horror house?
Like when Aaron Rodgers goes off about how he's treated by the Packers, I'm like, for me to take your side, I need more specifics.
But and did they not give you the private plane every time? Just 98% of the time?
So when Kyrie goes on these rants about like, and you just go, okay, cool.
So
like,
hard.
Just, I need more specifics. It was great too, Windhorst saying this isn't done yet because Phoenix was somewhere Kyrie wanted to go. If I were Phoenix, I would issue a statement today being like, we're not allowed to talk about other players, but we'll take the fine.
We are decidedly not interested in Kyrie Irving. Yeah. Find me just, now.
He's like, I don't care. My first week, I'm coming out hot. So wait,
hold on. Before you go, I just got to tell you this quick thing. I went to the Clipper game last night. As you know,
I heard the
only person who's probably more against having Kyrie on their team than you is probably me. It's probably we're in the finals. It was unbelievable to watch him with that Dallas team yesterday. The guy is so talented. If you're playing, I'm just saying, just from a talent standpoint,
sure.
If you're playing pickup and you've never played with a group of people before, who have all been playing together for a long time, and you go in, you're like, all right, I'll dribble there's like this indoctrination period, right? He goes in, it looked like he'd been on the team for 3 months. Like honestly, it was like watching, like I couldn't believe it. He was so good with the other guys and they were all playing together and it looked like they had 20 practices. And I was thinking like, this is why these teams keep talking themselves into him. He's so talented and he's so smart as a basketball player that they look at it, they turn it, they stare at it some more and then maybe... And Dallas will talk themselves into this. This will go great for 4 weeks. He's going to look awesome. And then he's going to do the Kyrie thing. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, but like when we did Sunday, I still had like more meat on the bone once I saw like more of the conversation. So I did an open Monday on Kyrie. And yeah. I go, you know, think about the lesson in all of this is that I can't believe there's a market for him and 5 teams are putting in serious offers.
Yeah.
5 teams. And that's that, you know, that's not including the teams that probably would have liked to take in a swing and it didn't have the assets or didn't make sense for their organizational timeline or whatever. So, I have a lot of sympathy for the teams that do this. Like those Clippers picks might end up being a disaster. Like this Paul George Kawhi pairing may not even come close. It hasn't
well,
come close.
Well, the SGA
part
is what the SGA right. part's worse than the picks. I mean, he's one of the best 12 guys in the league now.
Yeah. I mean, it feels that way, especially not, and like, look, Oklahoma City's like,
not a bad basketball team either.
I was blown away by them on Tuesday. I honestly went, right? I was like, holy shit. Yeah, I went and I was thinking the whole time, I'm thinking like, man, if Chet was out there, this might be a top three most fun team in the league. Just watch, because they all played hard. They had the 15 minute break for when LeBron broke the record. Everyone's on the court and I was kind of
watching. Which is fine,
them.
by the way. Like, what did people think was going to happen? I don't understand.
It happens every time somebody breaks a record. But they're doing the ceremony and I was watching their bench and they're watching respectfully, but then the game started and they went right back to kicking their ass. You know, and that those guys, like, they play hard. That Jalen Williams is, I think, like, borderline special. Like, he really might be a possible all-star, maybe a little higher because of his ability on both ends. Giddy, I really like that team. Anyway, with the Nets, 7 playoff wins total, 2 sweeps, 2 fired coaches. They got Ben Simmons, who's just a broken human being as a basketball player at this point.
Yeah, how about him the other day saying, like, it's still going to take some time. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Take your time, Ben. You're 30.
My model with this new lineup, my model projects him at 4.6 field goal attempts per game now.
He might never have to shoot. Well, have you ever seen a team that has more wings? And that's like now it's 8:36 a.m. Pacific time. Trade deadline's in a few hours. Everyone wants 3-and-D wings. They have like 7. You know, and I guess they're gonna have to do at least a couple of them. But man, they were 17-2 in the last 19 before KD got hurt, and all these people are saying like, watch out for the Nets. Nobody's playing better than them. And now it's over. And I think that KD foot in the line thing, which we did a podcast right after, that's going to be the lasting image, right? It's like a 6 inches. His foot's on the line. Maybe they win the title with him. I don't know what happens, but it just could never get going. Every single moment of this was a hiccup. They just could never keep it going for more than a few weeks.
And that's why I back to the original point, like if you have a guy who's not interested in playing, another guy in Harden who's not interested in being there, and then Simmons, who is, I think, just a different guy mentally with the way, you know, he processes the game, you know, trying to be sympathetic about it all. And then Durant, who like was cool with putting it all together, and, you know, he didn't stick up. He didn't stand up to Kyrie at any point. Like I would like to know what that private stuff was. But whenever we asked about the private stuff, KD would be like, I don't talk about him with all, you know, I don't talk to him about all this stuff. It's like, maybe you should. Yeah. But then again, it's also probably pointless too with Kyrie. So, you know, whenever I hear about like the coaches, and it was Nash, it was Jacques, it was Marks, it was Cy. It's like, man, can you imagine being Joe Cy and going, are you fucking serious? Is this the way it's supposed to
work?
One
of the most successful businessmen, you know, that's ever owned an NBA team. It's like, what's happening?
Imagine getting a couple bourbons and Joe Cy and being like a core buddy for 30 years going, hey, how's this experience been?
Like if House was Joe Cy and we were just like having cocktails or whatever, like, so what's it like owning this team? You'd be like, oh my God, you have no idea.
I would pay $9.99 a month for just Joe Cy monologues. Just like during this whole thing, like those confessionals on The Real World where Joe Cy would like just go into a room and the filter would be different. He'd be like, well, like, is it normal when none of your guys want to play?
But other business like, works like this. Well, the other thing is, I think I've said this on a pod, but I know this for a fact, that when they were really pushing, Harden to get traded from Houston to Brooklyn, that KD and Harden FaceTimed him together to try to convince him to do the trade. And KD really vouched for Harden. So you think like, not only did he get seduced by the KD Kyrie combo, but then this Harden piece, which just, as it turns out, we'll go into that later, but not as much of a disaster as maybe it could have been if they were paying the Gobert Durant price for the Harden trade, because they didn't. But man, he's got to be just scratching his head. All right, we're going to take a break. I have a lot more things to throw you. This year, the only app you need at your Super Bowl party is FanDuel, America's number one sports book. All you have to do is download FanDuel right now. Use promo code BS and you can bet Super Bowl 57 with a no sweat first bet. You'll get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. FanDuel lets you bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to who will score a touchdown. Stay tuned for, it'll be either part 2, part 3, part 4, part 5 today of our special trade deadline podcast extravaganza, but I will be doing $1 million picks. I'll have some parlays for you. We'll have a ton of fun. It will be great. Stay tuned for that. All this on a top-rated sportsbook app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use, because I will be using FanDuel Bets and FanDuel Odds. Best of all, you can get paid your winnings instantly, so join FanDuel today with promo code BS to claim your no-sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager. Only $10 deposit required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. All right, let's talk Suns and new ownership system, because the Suns have had a pretty cheap owner the last 20 years. Big Shot Bob Sarver. One of the more reviled owners we've had. No Donald Sterling, but maybe next, maybe a level two version.
But here's the funny thing with Sarver is that before all this stuff about his just day-to-day behavior was exposed, everybody hated him before this.
Right. He was already top three despised. So they apparently Ishbia, because this team, the transfer happened pretty fast, and he took control of the team pretty close to the trade deadline, which I think was intentional. I think he wanted to come in. I think he felt like they had a window. They're paying a huge tax bill. I mean, this team, I think the tax bill is going to be, it's in the 60s now. It might even be higher if they make a couple more moves. Not to mention the KD and Booker, just those two contracts. Booker signed an extension. He goes through 2028. Their window right now, CP3 is 37. KD is 34. He's under contract for this year and three more. Booker is not a free agent until 2028. And they got Denver to contend with. They got Golden State. They got Memphis. They got Dallas. The Clippers, I think, are a level below. I think if you're him, you have to do this, even though the price makes me want to throw up. I feel like they gave up just a shitload. I hate giving. They're giving away unprotected picks. You know, at the end of this deck, we don't even know what's even. Are we all going to be alive in 2029? The same thing with that Dallas pick that that they gave up in the Kyrie trade. It's like, man, you better really be sure Luka's going to be here 6 years from now. I think it was all worth it, but I have to ask you, your guy Chris Paul, it's been a rocky ride. A lot of times, maybe you felt like you were close to a title, close to a ring, some disappointments, and then it felt like it was kind of hitting an end here. And
the tone in your voice right now.
Phoenix was not really a contender anymore. It was going to get weird with Chris. He had like this $15 million option next year. Now he's in the best basketball situation I think he's ever been in. He's got a center who can roll the basket. He's got the best scoring forward of all time. He's got Booker, who's the best two guard in the league. You have these two crazy options at the end of games. And then Chris too. Is this the best situation he's ever been in?
Yeah, because even when he was on those Clippers teams that were good, when they beat that Spurs team in a first round where, like, the Spurs are your first round opponent, if you looked at, like, how bungled the standings were, you know, the Spurs. Do you remember that when he hit? I'm just trying to bring up game winners in the
yeah,
playoffs.
Yeah, 2015.
With Chris Paul. Yeah, but it was like this down to the last week thing where the seeding was like, well, how is this going to play out? So, anyway.
Yeah.
It felt like the window was closing. You're right about the option. It's like $30 million on the books for next year, then the year after that, but they have to pick up the $15 million guaranteed to add to the other $15 that's an option like June of this year. So the way it had played this year, you know, he got off to a rocky start. He's missed two long stretches. I thought there were times where I thought he looked old, and then there were other times where I'm like, you know, I feel like it's coming back a little bit, because the shooting had been in decline the last couple seasons from deep. That was kind of alarming.
The two-point shot stuff was way down. That's what, like his... For how short he is, the 2-point percentage was always like super high. You know, it was always like in the 550, you know, 580, something like that. And this year was in the 40s for a while, but it started to come back. I felt like he had a little something left the last like 3 weeks.
That's how I felt. I mean, look, I'll admit I'm hanging on. I'm watching it, like looking for something, because, you know, and I think I've been very fair about it throughout the season. I was like, man, sometimes he looks a little old. To me, he's getting stuck on some of these traps, like a couple of fucking 8 second calls on him. The Toronto game, he had one not that long ago. I'm like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And so, look, my biggest issue with the way they built this team was against Milwaukee. They didn't add the extra big that could have swung them the title. They didn't have enough. They've been really short on depth going
into
this
Halliburton?
Year.
Halliburton.
Halliburton, and then the Jalen Smith decision. It's like, Jesus Christ, even if you don't like him, like, pick up the option. You like him enough to pick him. and fucking less than 2 years later, you've already decided to move on from him.
But that's the Suns owner thing, though. Like, if Vishby is the owner, they're picking up the option. That was a cost-cutting move.
If you're 29 other owners, you're picking up the option. You know, normally you pick up the option to spare yourself the embarrassment of not picking it up. Like, the guys will pay the guy the third year because they don't feel like opening themselves up to the criticism of already being out on a guy less than 2 years of actually playing. So, you know, as the Booker thing, you know, honestly, with the Booker injury and the Paul vacations because of the health stuff this season, this should actually play into their hands because they've actually been a team that's gone through some playoff battles. As disappointing as last year was, and that's like an all-timer against Dallas. There's no excuse for it. It can't fucking happen. And they lose, and then obviously in the finals before. But if you feel like you're adding Durant, who, by the way, Durant is one of the few stars where you can put him in different basketball situations and he will thrive without detracting from what everybody else is doing, okay? Because of what we saw in Golden State and them adapting to him and him adapting to Golden State, it worked. A lot of these dudes that can put up huge, huge numbers, you're like, okay, where's the basketball fit? With Durant being added to a team this talented, I never, ever worry about that. I don't. Yeah, and that's a massive obstacle.
Yeah, that's his superpower other than just his ability to get 2 points whenever he wants. But he can fit into any situation. He can, if you need him to play a little bigger, he can do that. If he just, you want to be like small forward, whatever, he can even play like stretch five. He gives you so many different options and he's just a good basketball player. I'm with you. I think there's so few guys that could just come in and just immediately fit in with everything. That's why the Kyrie thing, I was impressed last night. I don't think he'll do that all the time, but you know, there's certain guys who are just operating at a higher level, which is why Kyrie still seduces these people. Phoenix is tied for the 4 seed right now, ironically, with Dallas. That could be our round one matchup, which would be pretty amazing. But I think we both thought Phoenix would be like in that play. When Booker went out for this long, I think we both thought, all right, this is going to be Cam Johnson still out. They're going to be in that play-in zone and Golden State will be the one that rises up. Then Curry gets hurt. Now this flips and they kind of switch bodies. It's like a body switch movie, right? Where Golden State now is the one you have to kind of worry about. And Phoenix is the one that looks like, you know, can they catch Sacramento? They're three back in the loss column, but they have a chance to be a top 3 seed now.
I don't know that I ever assumed much about the West other than Denver. And then, you know, this Memphis thing is still been a little surprising. I know they've had, you know, guys out, but they've got some losses. They're like, what the hell's going on with you guys? And maybe this is just their down stretch, you know, of the contenders. Usually everybody has like one or two of these.
It seems like a young team having some young team growing pains stuff, especially when Adams went out. It just seems like that kind of the mom and dad left and the kids are home, like making pizza in the oven and setting pizza on fire. And it's like, oh, these... Not totally ready for this yet. They also talked a big game, which I think is probably not endeared them to the rest of the league. They're a little bit of a bullseye on their back. I think teams like going against them. There's a little added, you can see it in some of these games. There's a little fuck you with the other teams with this team.
Yeah, I think we got a sense of that in the Golden State series last year. Like, I like Memphis, but after seeing, you know, that whole festival where they're just playing whoop that trick, fucking Draymond's going at it and they're putting it on him.
Yeah.
And then Ja kind of dabbled into like, what are you talking about? Social media posts where when he got hurt, he would like, we're talking code breaks. And it was all this back and forth. And it's like, man, you guys are carrying yourselves. Like, you got some kind of resume here, which, you know, honestly, if you were going from like a sports psychologist thing, I guess we'd all rather have that. Like, I'd rather have you feel like you do belong.
You'd rather have the irrational confidence.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Then why are we even here? But it was a lot to it. And just from like a basketball observer, I was like, I kind of feel like I wanted to have him get put on him like pretty good. And
you want to see like a little, you want to see him get slapped basically. Who would you have as your most fun playoff series in the West? If you could have any combination for one round.
Kyrie, KD, Westbrook in Loge watching.
I still think it's Denver Phoenix because you and I have the same kind of, I don't totally love watching Luka. Just kind of do, you know, 30 times a game, just dribble slowly as everyone's. It's not for me. I think Denver Phoenix would potentially be orgasmic offensively on both ends. I would want to watch every single possession of that. So just so, because Phoenix would be so sophisticated offensively. And Denver, I just love watching. So I think that's my favorite. We might get that before the conference finals. That could be like round two. Who knows?
I'm not done though on the West thing because you were saying like, hey, doesn't it feel like
if Phoenix was healthy going into the last, I don't know, 15 games, I wouldn't expect them to be a play-in. I mean, basically every time you look at the West, like I lose track of it after 4 or 5 days. Like if I'm not looking every morning, I may pull it up going, all right, let me check some stuff. And I'm like, holy shit, wait a minute. Minnesota's here now? Oh, wait, Minnesota fell off?
The Lakers are like, four seed, four losses. Right.
So, you know, look at the Pelicans part of this. Like look where Phoenix was when they actually had guys and Paul wasn't even playing that well. They had a weird stretch. You know, the Nets, like to your point earlier, which I thought was like one of the funniest Kyrie quotes that was lost in all of it. He's like, I did my job. They were a 4 seed when I left. And you're like, what? So anyway, we don't need to do any more on that. But
I love that Kyrie's had some doozies. He's averaging 3 doozies a week now where you're just like, what? He said,
right.
And I don't, they made that up. That's not a real quote.
I don't want to derail that from... from the rest of the question. I guess my answer that I didn't feel like I was complete on before was just, I don't look at the West and assume really anything other than I thought Golden State, once they had everybody back, that, hey, you're going to look up. They're 2 good weeks away from being like a 3 or 4 seed. This is going to happen. Sacramento's been the steadiest out of a lot of these teams, which is why everybody kind of looks at them going, wait, are they really going to be a 3 seed? And it's like, yeah, but they're just consistently doing what they need to do. The offense has been incredible. And there's all these sharks circling that can't go in the right direction because of their own health issues. I mean, Golden State had a chance last night before they blew that lead to Portland to be the 3 over for the first time all season. And they couldn't do it.
Yeah, we're going to start Sundays at probably the end of the month. And it just feels like every week there's going to be some different, whoa, this team. And we're going to be riding the roller coaster. There's 6 weeks left this season. All right. I have a topic. Was this the biggest trade haul of the last 10 years? And I made my rankings and I'm going to give them to you and you tell me if I'm wrong. I still think Paul George was the most.
It is.
Because it was SGA and it was 1 million picks and SGA is so good. In the moment, it wasn't the biggest, but I think it's going to be hard to top that for me. I have Durant second and I think Davis is third. And the reason I have Durant second and Davis third is because I like Bridges more than Brandon Ingram. And it's the same amount of like scary picks, but I just think Bridges is a slightly safer bet than Ingram was. And you also had Lonzo and Josh Hart in that trade. I would have Davis third, the Gobert trade fourth, Pierce Garnett fifth, because I think people forget that that was the Tatum Brown thing, which nobody should forget. Donovan Mitchell sixth, the first James Harden trade seventh, Westbrook for CP3 and all those picks. I have that eighth. Like kind of a sneaky, crazy amount of picks. There's 3 first-rounders in that to acquire Russell Westbrook. Daryl's like, that's got to be on his tombstone. The second James Harden trade ninth. And then the Kyrie Boston trade 10th. Those are all just from basically everything's from the last 5 years except that Pierce Garnett trade. Did that list sound right to you? Is there anything I'm undervaluing?
Where'd you have Gobert?
I had Paul George, Durant, Davis, Gobert fourth. Maybe it should be third.
Well, when you talk about the players going out, you know, Ingram, if Ingram's healthy, he's better than Bridges. But I'd agree with you.
Yeah, but there's real stuff floating around about Ingram now. About like what's going on with his lower body, just in general. I don't know if people love the direction health wise that he's going. I still don't know what's going on with his feet. I don't know what you've heard about that, but Bridges is just good. Bridges isn't a top 20 guy, but he's definitely a top 35 or 40 guy in the league, and he's young and he's been in big games. You know,
I don't know. I think Bridges is. I like him. Every team should want him. I think. Despite the shooting numbers and everything kind of going up just from a production standpoint, because there's more opportunities, which is like funny because you look at some of these numbers like Josh Hart and his trade and you're like, man, he lit it up for Portland last year. And they're like, that's when they had the all Google team. Like you'd go, who are these guys? And it was simply opportunity, which happens a lot. There'd be these weird stretches from now to the end of the season. You're going to see some of your players. You'd be like, holy shit, Malik Beasley went for 20 a game at one point. And you're like, okay, but look at the situation that he was in. So when I look at Bridges, I think it was both like a real bump in opportunity, but also a bit of an exposure on like, you know, there's a cap on
what number guy he can be for you, and it's probably no higher than three, which is all to say I still really like him. He's young. The contract isn't even remotely bad. If OG Anunoby has multiple teams offering up a rotation player and two unprotected first, then Bridges should be worth more than that, because OG, despite, I think we all kind of like Anunoby, but damn, I mean, the market for a guy that doesn't play enough consistently and you still get him confused, maybe it's just because of the Raptors roster, like it's just length all over the place and guys that look interchangeable. So I'm not going to split hairs with you on that, saying, oh, well, it has to be Ingram a little bit higher. I just think the Gobert one's probably, I mean, the good.
So you have the Gobert one higher. Okay. Here's why I brought this up. I still hate the first James Harden trade. And the Houston fans, who I think have given both of us shit for a while, and both of us were like, we don't feel like they got enough. And the Houston fans are like, oh, how do you like this now? It's like, well, basically, you end up with two swaps and three unprotected firsts for a guy who's one of the 35 best players in the history of the league, who was still considered to be in his prime, even though he's a little out of shape. They never got that extra piece. And then you see some of these other trades, and it's like, you know, Phoenix just paid way more for Durant than I think the Nets paid for Harden. I think that the Paul George, David, I just don't think it's in the same class, personally.
Yeah.
It's three firsts and two swaps is the trade. Everything else is gone.
No, I mean, it's kind of like to the point that we make is I'd like, if I'm going to trade one of these kind of iconic guys of his era with still some tread left on that tire,
a face as you said that. You're like, yeah, kind of guys of his era, and your face looks like curling out of the left side here.
I don't know. They should have a ref introduce him when he goes into the Hall of Fame. You're like, yeah, we bumped up his production 30%. A lot of people weren't able to figure it out. The Russillo guy was on it pretty early, but you know, at that point it was too late.
Presenting James Harden is right. Scott Foster.
Right. Like, you know, teams kept saying we're gonna, like, I'm not really doing anything. He's grabbing my arm and chucking me. And we were like, that's just the price you pay. Like, what the fuck does that mean? This is something we've already talked about before. I'm not super interested in debating Houston fans about it anymore. I don't, whatever.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, it's just kind of nice. Look, it's just kind of nice to get, like, the one thing that you plug into your rotation. You feel like, hey, we have, it's great to get all the picks. Is there one thing that I know that is real, right? And in this case of the Nets, they have Bridges. And Cam Johnson is real. Cam Johnson was a hell of a player.
I like those two. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, you're never going to get
the new look Nets, Bridges, Cam Johnson, Cam Thomas, Seth Curry, like all four of those guys.
I like Claxton.
Claxton. Now there's six guys I like. Dinwiddie, he's fine. Then you go into that Simmons, Harris, O'Neal, Crowder, Watanabe group. I mean, Simmons is the turd in the punch bowl, because if he was actually good, you'd be like, you could kind of talk yourself into this being like a frisky eight seed.
The East is so good. Piece. Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know, like Windhorse had said, there's not much trade value there. I guess it's just back to the point. Like the Clippers thing with SGA, that was an insane, like, oh, and by the way, you get this. With Gobert, you know, Vanderbilt, whatever. I really like him. Nice rotational player. Maybe it's the Walker Kessler and he becomes, you know, a center.
I think it's Walker Kessler is the one. Yeah, that's pretty nice.
I'm just kind of going back to like where some of these, you know, you look back on it, you're like, was there anyone that you actually got that could plug in right away? And look, for Houston, like the Tari Eason thing looks real. So that's the Houston argument against it being like, hey, we got that first that year, so you guys shut the fuck up. Because like Tari Eason, the evaluation on him, you're like, okay, how much of this is gonna work? Because I felt like he was, oddly enough, like I couldn't believe some of the shit calls he got at LSU. I'd be like, man, what? And it's not about that. It's about his energy. And as soon as Tari Eason takes the floor, he impacts the game in like a bunch of awesome ways. So
yeah, I agree.
That's the Rockets argument against it. It really, this becomes just semantics of, was there a known piece in all of these deals? And if I'm going to trade one of these guys, I'd like to be able to pull that off. And the Nets did it with two. So there you go.
It's so funny. You think 20 years ago, the Lakers need to trade Shaq, right? And they end up trading him for, would they get Lamar Odom, Brian Grant's contract, Caron Butler, something else. There might've been a pick in there. And now 20 years later, that pick is like, they're trading Shaq, four unprotected first, one swap, Caron Butler. Like that Miami would have had to basically gut their entire team to get Shaq. That's just what's happened with superstars over the last really the last 10 years, but when you think back to the 20s, like the Stephon Marbury trade 20 years ago, right? That was like, it was I think two firsts and maybe Antonio McDice was in that, but that was like, whoa, they gave up a shitload for Marbury. And it's like, that's 30% of what's happened. Now, let's take one more break. I have a couple more things to throw you. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Take a minute to check your social battery. How you doing? Does the thought of social events make you feel excited or exhausted? Are you like me where you're looking at April and you're just thinking, man, there's a lot of sports. There's a lot of podcast content. There's a lot of stuff to watch. I got to make sure I don't lose control of the narrative here. Got to spend time with the family. Got to unwind. Got to spend time with my friends. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up, heading into the summer. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time, but therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. And when you're feeling worn out from socializing, therapy can give you the help for the tools you need to take care of yourself and recharge, because a full battery is the key to a full life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BillSimmons today to get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/BillSimmons. So we talked about Brooklyn. 4 years later, when they had all that cap space, everybody was all excited. They had that kind of fun team with Russell and LeVert and all those guys. And then they went all in on KD and Kyrie. And 4 years later, they're basically in the same spot, right? They're not a contender. They probably have the same amount of picks, even though the picks are all from different teams instead of their own team. They have... 2023, they have Phoenix's first and their first. They don't have anything in 24. 25, they have a Phoenix first. They have to swap picks with Houston. 27, they have a Phoenix first. They have to swap picks with Houston. They have a top eight Philly first. 28, they have a Phoenix swap. 29, they have Dallas's first and their own first. Basically, they traded for the last 4 years, they traded their 20, 22, 24, and 26 Brooklyn first and Philly's 23rd first. Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, and D'Angelo Russell to basically go sideways with this weird team they have now with Ben Simmons and Bridges and Cam Johnson, all that stuff. I can't remember a team being in the mix more that did less. It's four straight years of talking about them. What happens to the new look Nets fans, Russillo? What do you do with your like your BKN hoodie? What happens to those guys?
This is exactly what's going to happen. Remember when it was like Kenny Atkinson, Sean Marks, and they put together this plucky, competitive, like 40-something win team. And then Kyrie and Durant talked about like the culture that was established, and that's why they went there, when it was like, no, they didn't. They went there.
And then they destroyed the culture in 6 months.
Right. They went there because it's one of the cool destinations. And, you know, the Knicks couldn't get that done, as close as it sounds like that may have actually been to happening with Katie and Kyrie. And talk about like the all-time Jose Contreras lesson of like, be careful what you wish for. And the number of times, whether it's in sports or in life, where you want this thing so fucking bad and the best thing that could ever happen is that you don't get it. You know, not saying like the Knicks have had this incredible run here, but imagine if this were the Knicks dealing with this stuff, like as bad as it was with Brooklyn and the daily topic that it was, if it were the Knicks, I mean, times it by whatever. So when it started going bad, and you're right, those guys immediately destroyed the culture they pretended was a factor in them signing there in the first place, which Nets fans and sometimes even the media would like argue, being like, no, it really was the culture. You're like, shut the fuck up. Okay. Nothing to do with it. Then it was like, man, I kind of missed that plucky team. And you're like, no, you miss it now because it's been a disaster. So I think there'll be this weird like emotional revitalization of like, I like it. We're off the radar. We're the underdogs. You can root for these guys. And then when they can't beat anybody in the playoffs, you're going to be going, hey, let's start bringing in some stars again. Right?
Well, we wanted Simmons to be in a more quiet situation. Here it is. They're the number two team in New York and nobody's going to care about them anymore. And he can kind of do his thing. I don't mind as you know, I love Seth Curry. Cam Johnson, I don't know what the fuck happened to him in the last week, but it was, you know, if you're trying to replace Kyrie's offense, he was able to do it for three games. And I don't know.
You're talking Cam Thomas?
Cam Thomas, I mean, sorry.
Right.
I just did the Eddie Andelman.
Hey, look,
took the guy's first name.
We're in that range.
So I have to ask you, will any big market franchise, you feel like this will happen again, that this will not be a cautionary tale to these owners between what happened in LA with the Lakers and what happened in Brooklyn here with KD and Kyrie? Will this keep happening where franchises are like, we want this guy so badly, we're basically going to turn over our franchise here. We're going to trust these two outsiders to come in. We're going to give everything to them and let them do their thing. And you think like Harden and Houston, same thing, where he's like, I don't like Chris Paul anymore. Can you trade all of our picks to get Westbrook? I don't really like Westbrook anymore. Can you trade me? Do we feel like we're now moving into a different era where this stuff won't happen anymore? Or do you think this is just the new NBA and it will keep happening over and over again?
It's going to keep happening all the time because you can't win unless you start playing 11 on 11. You can't win unless you have one of these guys. So you do everything you can to get him. And there's an argument to be made, as much as I still don't know what kind of tax, like what the fuck tax is coming down the road for some of these teams that just hand out all these unprotected picks. I think the argument can be made in the past, like you couldn't even do this back then. So now if you decide, okay, Donovan Mitchell wants out of here, like what kind of haul can we get? Like, all right, there's a path with multiple organizations. If you're willing to hand us three or four of these unprotected and then swap a little bit later on, and maybe one of the salary fillers is a nice rotational guy that can develop into something, like this is great that we actually have this opportunity to do some of this stuff. So, I mean, do you think this is a cautionary tale that somehow the league will pivot from? Because I think we've already learned that they're not going to pivot from it. The Kyrie market by itself proved that the teams are going to do whatever they can to hopefully get one of these special players.
The new CBA, which they're working on. So you think like what they did with some of the different CBAs over the years, right? We just got where Jay Crowder going to the Bucks. Knew that was going to happen for like 700 second round picks. The new CBA, you think like in the, the early 2000s, the big thing they wanted to change was these contracts are too long. These
right,
teams
they were
are
7 years.
These guys, yeah, 6 years, 7 years, and 2 years in, there was so much buyer's remorse. Like they had to create the amnesty clause. They literally had to create this fake rule out of nowhere to give teams a second chance at getting out of some of the bad deals they gave. So as we headed into the end of the 2000s and then the lockout in 2011, and it's like, we need shorter contracts. We got to save ourselves from ourselves. Let's go shorter. I think the shorter contracts have led to just complete mayhem, you know, where these guys, they can always become a free agent down the road. And it's just these teams are on eggshells. I think it's fun for us. It's fun for, like, think when we started doing podcasts in 2018, how many emergency pods, how many giant trades have we done? How many like, oh, I wonder if this will happen. It's way more fun for that. But when you're just talking about like, you know, what it's like for fans, what it's like to be loyal to the same franchise, like what are we trying to build as a league? Are we building relationships with just fans and players or fans and teams? Like, where does this go? I don't really know. And I don't know if there's an answer to that, but I do think with the next CBA, maybe the contracts are longer would be a fix. Maybe it's like, you can give out 5 years to somebody else's free agent. Maybe it's 6 years to your own free agent. And maybe that's one of the tweaks where, you know, you can lock down somebody for a tiny bit longer and maybe they won't want to leave as much. I don't know. It's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, because the way it used to work, if it was your guy, you could go 7 years. And then the salary raises were like 2.5% per year. So over 7 years, that like really added up. And then the new team could go max 6 years. And I think the raise increases were like a percentage and a half, maybe, like, you know.
Well, remember the Antoine deal? Antoine played 3 years and then they had to give him basically 6 years for 100 or whatever, 6 years for 80, whatever it was. It was like, oh my God, the guy's 21.
But that's the other thing commitment? Too, is that you were just giving the 7 year max to your best player. So there wasn't even a tier to it, which is a little, right. You know, that's not that different than what we have
but
now.
But they added the rookie scale. So now it's a little bit later in the guy's career, maybe before they get the big contract. And I also think social media and the way people follow the league now, it's so much harder to just be like, I got paid. I don't give a shit anymore. Nobody can really do that anymore. I can't think of three examples of somebody just be like stars. I got paid. I'm now checking out. Can you think of anybody in the last 10 years?
Yeah, Westbrook, when he picked up his player option for $47 million and then posted a video in his car singing, "You Can't Break My Soul," and then wonders why people were pissed at him.
But Westbrook was trying. It's just you didn't want him to try. You wanted him to sit on the bench. That was the problem. It wasn't like he didn't care. He just thought he was the best guy in the team.
Yeah.
He was amazing. The scoring record game, the more I'm thinking about it, he took 19 shots in that game. Did you see that? LeBron had 20 shots. Westbrook had 19. Clear out, LeBron. Your night.
I was praying for that game to be tied close and LeBron was a point off the record. And it would be like shot
Westbrook
clock
going
off,
to the basket.
And Westbrook just waves off the screen. I wanted it so bad. I would have made shirts and donated all the profits to charity.
So would you make contracts a little longer? What would you do?
I'm going to give you a long answer, and I know you hate that, but there's a very great lesson in this that I keep trying to tell people about this all the time. One of my favorite examples of like why people just constantly want to fix shit all the time is that you have NBA free agency after the draft. In the NFL, you have the draft before free agency. I've heard arguments from both leagues saying it should be the other way around, hoping to have the opposite of what they have. And when you hear the argument, you're like, oh, that's a pretty good argument, except that if it were the other way around, you would then go 10 years and argue it the other way. Before we had a lottery system in place, right, with the Houston Rockets, it was very simple. How does the draft order go? Who lost the most games? They pick first. And then we were worried about tanking for what? Hakeem going back to the early 80s.
Ralph Sampson.
Ralph Sampson. And so there was this whole thing with Houston Rockets. I remember reading the Sports Illustrated when I was a little kid. And I was like, what goes on? How does this work? It's like, hey, we're going to have a lottery. It's like, okay, that makes a ton of sense. And then the lottery hangs out for a couple of years. And you're like, wait, no, we need to have a weighted lottery because this still doesn't really solve the problem. And like, this is unfair. And you're like, okay, cool. And like, now we have a weighted lottery. But guess what? The weighted lottery is not rewarding the team enough. Like, that's right. So let's change it again. Oh, wait. Now the weighted lottery is emphasizing losing too much. So now we need to flatten it again. And now we're in a flattening phase where the odds don't heavily favor teams that lost the most games the way they did before to supposedly solve tanking.
And we added the plan too.
Right. And then they added the plan. But then what will happen is they're going to say, man, the worst teams aren't getting good enough of a shot at the best player. So we need to change. The point is that the same thing with the contracts, where the owners got what they deserved on this one. They didn't want the 7-year maxes. They didn't want the 6-year free agent maxes. They worked it where it's basically like 4 years the way they do these extensions. So it's like, cool, you're not in the books for a long time, but now you've opened up all this freedom of movement. Now, not to say that there couldn't be a player who would sign a 7-year max under the old rules that would ask for a trade with 6 years left in his contract. That would happen. We had Simmons ask for it before the contract extension even kicked in. We had Durant, who picked up the 4-year extension, then deciding, hey, I want out before it even starts. So that target of it having to be a year left or a year and a half left, like Anthony Davis, all of that has evolved where nobody really gives a fuck anymore. But what I would say is, sure, Bill, make them longer. But as soon as they're longer, then somebody else is going to say they're too fucking long again. Just like everything else that we're in a hurry to change all the time. And that's why I spend my time on other fucking things. That's why I spend my time on other things. Because I go, as soon as you'll have it this way in 3 years, you're going to want to fucking change it again. So go ahead, do whatever you want. I'm not interested in trying to solve it with you because some of this stuff is unsolvable for everybody involved.
I also think the NBA probably likes it more this way, deep down. I mean, think about it. Super Bowl
week. Do you think the owners do?
It's Super Bowl week. If people are talking NBA on a Thursday, they've been talking about NBA all week, you know, and I don't think the owners like it more, but I think in general, I think they think this is better to have people talking more often about the league. I don't know if I agree.
I just don't know if you can eat off of this stuff. You know, we spend a lot of time of like, oh, look how many impressions and look what happened here or whatever. And it's like, cool. We trended for 2 days before the Super Bowl. I'd like my star to be here longer. You know what I mean? Or
yeah.
I'd like to also not have a 7-year deal for, you know.
Cam Thomas. Cam Thomas, 7 years, $120 million. He did 44 points in 3 games in a row.
Yeah, you know, that's why the franchise tag in the NFL is the most important thing that doesn't get talked about enough. Mm. Because that mechanism exists, it suppresses real free agency. And it's brilliant. Fans were like, wait, if my team has an awesome player who's probably my favorite player and he can't really leave and they just tag him and then whatever, that's fucking awesome. And when you're a fan, like, this is great. And you get older and you're like, that's
And, you know, I've heard people say like, oh, the franchise tag is actually only used this many times. It's like, that's not the point. It's not how many times it's used. It's that it exists as a mechanism. So whenever right. I hear it for it, the NBA.
It pushes people to actually like figure it out with the team they're on versus just, you have like, to. I'm leaving, I'm out.
Right.
Like Lamar Jackson's a good example. If Lamar Jackson was an NBA player, it would be, he'd be getting traded this summer. That would be it.
Right. So I would never root for any mechanism that prevents the players from actually experiencing true free agency. I mean, I just philosophically, I don't believe in any of that stuff. Yeah, I mean, you know, you and I can go on rants on certain players. It's like, come on, man. Like, seriously, you're going to fucking do this? But it doesn't mean that I would ever side with ownership on having more control. The owners got, but, you know, they wanted shorter contracts. Okay, cool. Look what happened. And there's also just kind of
right. the, complete chaos.
The generational sensibility of this, too, where, you know, there was little apprehension. Remember Kevin Garnett? He wanted out of Minnesota forever. Didn't want to be the bad guy, didn't want to leave. You know, like he probably stayed there how much
three
longer?
3 extra years.
Three, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you
how
know.
About Pierce? Pierce had that rocky road in the 04 to 06 range where it felt like he was going to get traded every week.
And those guys just didn't do it because like nobody else was really doing it. And then, yeah. you know, LeBron, all he did was leave as a free agent.
Right? He never got traded.
Did. It's all he did was leave as a free agent. And if you think about the reaction to what he did over a decade ago, and then, you know, that kind of morphed pretty quickly into the Melo thing, going the different path and demanding out. I mean, the more people do something, the more acceptable it is, the more desensitized we become to the whole thing. But I would never want anything that would limit a player's, you know, ability to move on. It just doesn't mean I like every time a guy asks out.
I would do two things, two small tweaks. I would actually raise it by a year so I could sign somebody else's free agent for 5 years, not four, and I could sign my own free agent for six. I also would get rid of the rule with the, all this fucking stupid, you can't trade a first consecutive years and the protect. I would just get rid of all that. If Phoenix wanted to trade six first rounds in a row for Kevin Durant, let him do it. This isn't 1982 anymore. The reason they came up with that rule was because of the Cleveland Cavaliers owner, Ted Stepien, who was an absolute, I mean, by far the worst owner in the history of the league. Like, just was trading first round picks for like Don Ford and people that were like 11th men. It would be like the equivalent if you had a team now that was like, I've traded my unprotected first next year for Peyton Pritchard. Like, what? And that then it's the second pick of the draft. So they put that rule in. It was 40 years ago. I just think you should be able to trade as many picks as you want. If you want to trade your 2038 first round pick, go ahead. I don't know why they have that in.
Well, to protect themselves from themselves. That's why you can't just trade a first. Like, I would love if you could just say, you know, this happens maybe like a Jared Vanderbilt type thing where your yeah. team, and you already like your rotation, you don't have a salary necessarily that's low enough to match up to him, and you go, can I just trade you, you know, a top five protected for Vanderbilt next year?
That's and another thing. Like, it should be 50% of the salary should be the trade, not like 80% or whatever. It should just be easier to trade guys, I think.
I would like that, but it's all set up to protect. You know, they got so freaked out, I think, with Portland and the Trailblazers there, that team in the late 90s, early 2000s, it felt like they went 12 deep. You know, you go back and look at that, you're like, God, damn, yeah, everybody on the team.
They were just grabbing.
I think it's almost like having a credit card max. Like, I can afford a higher credit line, but, you know, this is probably the smarter thing for you to do. And I also think, like, if you waived the trade restrictions, which I agree with you, I'd be okay with it. But in a way, like, it would just change all the pricing. Like, Durant would probably be six straight picks, you know?
I'm into it.
You're
we're
fine
gonna
with
do it. Let's fucking do it. Last thing, because we're going to go, because we have more parts to do today. I think the Knicks were the other team in this KD thing. It's unclear to me whether they were an actual real pursuer or... I know the Knicks were the other team in this thing. It's unclear to me if they were a real pursuer or if they were trying to jack up the price for KD with the Suns. Kind of hoping maybe Booker down the road. I think the Booker Knicks thing, just way down the road. Like, he's not a free agent until 2028. But if this turns into a situation where they had their run for 3 years and then it's a rebuild and Devin Booker's like, all right, well, we had our run. We won a title, whatever. I do think the Knicks, like, what would KD have done for them? Would he have made them, you know, a real contender? I don't know. But I think if Barrett, Toppin and some other stuff and four firsts and a swap, like, they could have matched what the Suns gave. I just don't know if it was the right idea because I don't think they're closer to a title. And I think it would have been weird to watch him, I don't know, him, Randall and Brunson, maybe. I don't know. I just don't, I don't feel as good about it as I did with the Suns, but I do think the Knicks were involved.
Randall Durant is worse than Ayton Durant slash Booker or whatever. I mean, you know, basketball fit, it just makes a ton of sense. But back to the original point, like we both agreed on, as you said, his superpowers, he's the star that comes in and adapts. Like, he doesn't overlap in a bad way. He overlaps in a productive way as a basketball player.
It's just Randall's tough to play with.
Randall is a little tough to play with. And even like Brunson's been incredible for them. And I'm happy to see Randall kind of back to the guy 2 years ago instead of the dude that's fighting with his home crowd all last season. Like, that got really fucking weird last year. So, you know, just to see them competitive and, you know, they're better. The RJ thing's, I think, still kind of weird. You know, I don't know. I spent probably way too much time talking about fourth quarter rotations with him the other day. But I think it gets a little stagnant, you know, and it could turn into Durant watching those two other guys. I also wonder how much they were motivated to maybe try to answer for not going for Mitchell, which clearly the way they use Barrett now in the fourth quarter speaks to, like, you know, and they could have done the Barrett thing. They could. I know the contract thing, people made it out to be a little bit more challenging. I still think they could have gone ahead and done it, but they were kind of like split on, well, we don't want to use these assets because we're going to need that for the next person that we put with this. It's like, get the first person first. So, you know, I don't know if that would have been part of the motivation, but you make a really good Booker point that you know, Suns fans got really upset when we brought this up years ago about, like, trying to predict the next upset star. You know, Chris Paul,
are like, what the hell? We're the favorites of the title. Why are you talking about this? But
we're not.
It needs to be discussed.
We're not, but we are in that, you know, I get it. Nobody wants to give Chris Paul credit for anything. And after the Dallas series, I get it. Guy had COVID, whatever.
He did.
Chris Paul fixed where this organization was going. Okay.
He did.
He fucking fixed it. And I don't know where it was going before he got there, but it wasn't good. All right. And so, as dicey as the Paul thing was getting, Bill, I think this delays, like, how weird could the Phoenix thing get? Now, Booker's probably good enough. He's so good.
Yeah, but you got KD 34 with a bunch of surgeries at this point, right? And a bunch of miles and a bunch of minutes. And you could tell me he's going to be 5 more years at this level. You could tell me it might be 2. I don't know. Anything after the next 2 years would be an unexpected pleasant bonus if he's still at this level.
But I think that's the accurate way. Like, we both get this actually could totally suck for Phoenix. Durant gets hurt every year. We'll see what happens. Paul hasn't been healthy. You've got this Booker thing that's now twice where he's missed time. But
eight and they've been complaining about for 2 years.
Yeah, who, by the way, this week decides, you know, I'm sick of the haters. You're like, feel free to play this hard all the time then, man.
Yeah. Just protect the rim and roll to the basket and get some rebounds.
You know, I don't know that he's ever going to have the makeup and an approach to the game that you'd hope, but he's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, like, the window that seemed closed last week is open for another 2 years. And that's what the bet was, right?
Yeah. I just think the Knicks now are in pole position for the next big trade with somebody. And the Nets, maybe, if you're talking about big market teams with some urgency and a bunch of picks, I think the Knicks and the Nets are the two teams now. And as we head to the summer, who the fuck knows who's going to be the next unhappy guy? You just think, like, we've had the Nets 1, 2, 3 big trades by the Nets in what, a year? And then we've had, like, could you tell me Davis is just going to be like, I've had it. I don't want to play with LeBron anymore. I'm out in 4 months. Like, that sounds realistic to me. I watched him mope around on Tuesday night. I don't know what the fuck was going on with him. So could Karl Towns be like, this sucks, get me out of Minnesota? Like, on down the line, I think the Knicks, everything they're doing to me seems like there's a move kind of now brewing for them. And I don't know, the Mitchell trade would have been good for them, but I think ultimately wasn't going to win them the title this year. And there might be another good guy coming. So I don't know. I would just keep an eye on the Booker thing because the Kentucky ties and Wes and Leon, all that stuff.
Yeah, but now
it has to be taken seriously.
In the gossipy, let's just talk it out loud thing before Durant. Yeah, all right. Like, what would happen? You know, they don't pick up Paul's option, or, you know, I still think if you already got to pay him 15, you might as well pay him the other 15. But
they're
going to
pick
fourth
that up
year,
now, definitely picking it up next year, right? And the worst case is they're expiring. I wrote this in the trade Viacom. I had Booker ninth as the most untradeable guy because I just feel like he's Mr. Arizona. you know, he's the guy, especially if you look at how bad the other teams are. But now Durant, Durant's a bigger star than Booker is. We are at the 1 hour, 4 minute mark of taping. So we're going to go. We're going to come back. Potentially, we could be coming back in like 2 hours, or the worst case scenario, we'll come back after the deadline. We never talked about the Russell Lakers trade. I cannot wait for your thoughts on that. I'm sure there'll be some other stuff, but we will be back at least once more today with a much bigger podcast. But we had to get this Durant stuff out first. Priscilla, thank you. Thanks to Steve Cerruti and Kyle Creighton as well. And we will see you in a couple hours.